NHL, keeping you company during the coronavirus.
Hey, this is Cece Coleman from First Dates. You can catch me on FUBAR Radio. This is just a little reminder, if you're thinking about going out or you have been out, please, please, please stay at home. This isn't about you. There is a bigger picture to all of this. We need to be thinking about everyone else. We need to come together because we are all in this together. Hey, this is Cece Coleman from First Dates. You're listening to Stay Home and Chill on FUBAR Radio, keeping you company through the coronavirus.
Access all areas on FUBAR Radio.
We have Miles Mazet, who's on Main and Chelsea, here now.
Hello.
Hello. Hi, Miles. How are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you guys?
Yeah, good.
How have you been dealing with the year we've had, Miles? It's been 2020. As you say, it's been a strange one.
You know what? It's been a mix of emotions going up and down. There'll be some weeks where I feel really positive and, you know what, you've just got to, you know, keep your head forward and keep going. And then there's some days where it's a little bit tough. But I feel like because we're all in the same kind of space, like it kind of helps to know that you're not alone on this. So it really depends on the day.
I think that's most people, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. What was your kind of, did you have any go-to things to kind of get you through it, like in the first couple of lockdowns that we've had?
You know what? Like I, on the first very lockdown, I had moved in with a friend of mine and it was also a new friendship. So it was actually really nice in the first lockdown because we were just starting a new friendship and we just moved in together. So it was just like, oh, you know, we're two guys just like you're living in this new house. Let's just, you know, enjoy each other's company and that was nice. And I think that helped a lot because we were getting to know each other and also you're locked in together. So you kind of have to. It was nice. It was nice. I mean, towards the end, got sick of him, but it was nice.
It's like Big Brother or something, isn't it? It's like sitting in the Big Brother house.
Oh my God, it was. And he's a YouTuber. So it was, you know, him filming YouTube videos every day and I'm popping in and out.
It's something to do, at least, I guess.
Exactly.
What's been going on with the old dating life in 2020?
2020 dating has been a tricky one. I don't know if I'm the only single one here right now, but it was for
you
a single.
No, you're not. Sorry, I mean you're not.
But I think for singles, it was hard because, you know, the whole thing about being single is that you can go out and, you know, have amazing experiences, meet new people. You know, here lockdown was like, okay, well, how am I going to start dating? What is the way to do it? And I think everyone just went to virtual dating. That was like the main kind of focus, right? So it was tricky, but you know what? I found out that it was nice to experience, like, because I've never really virtually dated. I've never really gone on dating apps before until...
No one has. It's a completely new ball game.
So it was fun to kind of discover that and see how you can meet someone through even like, you know, video chat and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it was interesting for sure.
And how did you find the whole? So what were you doing? Dating through Zoom?
So I was on Badoo for the most of the time, and they have video chat and voice memo, so very similar to WhatsApp. So you could I'm very visual, so for me, like, just texting someone isn't really the right way forward. Like, I like to see someone, and I rather actually on the first, you know, I say date, virtual date, is to go straight in with a video call and say, hey, this is me, this is how untidy I am with my room, and who knows.
Did you get a good reaction to that? Because I would have been absolutely terrified if someone called me but within 20 seconds of saying hello. Be like, no, thank you, no.
I mean, it wasn't within 20 seconds. It wasn't just like,
let me call you.
I really, really fancy you. It was more like, you know, you'd have a little conversation. I think for me it was the first day or two you'd chat, you know, just chit-chat. And then after, do you want to go on a video call? And it was really weird because loads of people had different mindsets of how to video call. So you had a lot of people who would be like really relaxed and be in their casual clothes, comfies, which is a little bit of me, and I love to be in comfy clothes. But there's a lot of people who were like really put a huge effort in, which was like really nice because obviously, when you normally go on a date, you suit up or, you know, you wear really nice stuff, you put your makeup on all that. And it was really nice to see girls actually properly, like, proper do themselves up and have, like, a real date, I guess, on camera.
So it felt a bit normal.
Yeah, a little bit.
Ish.
A little bit, yeah, yeah. It was one of those, I was wearing a shirt and then just my boxers underneath. That's what it was.
The 2020
That's how most
special.
Of us have got through 2020, isn't it, doing the thing?
Yeah, exactly.
From the bottom half, just pyjamas and underwear.
Yeah.
So, Bowles, I wanted to ask you, obviously, you was missing from the last series of Made in Chelsea. Did you decide to consciously sit a series out?
Yeah, so funnily enough, this is probably the second time I've spoken about it. I haven't really spoken about it on any kind of press or any kind of radio show. It was series 19 was really tough for me because of my ex and my ex best mate at the time. And I'd gone through a lot of things, and coming to series 20, when we went into the first lockdown, I kind of took it as an excuse to take some time off. And I'd been on the show for 2 years and a bit. And I was like, okay, well, I think mentally for me, if I want to continue to be on the show, you know, I didn't say goodbye. I was like, look, I just need to take a step back, reassess myself, make sure that I'm grounding myself with really good people around me. And then when I do come back, I feel like, you know, it's a better version of myself. So that's what I did. I was like, look, I'm going to take this opportunity to actually say, hey, guys, go ahead, smash it, enjoy the series 20. I'm just going to do my thing for a bit and then I'll come back. So that's what I've done.
And were they all right with that? Were they happy for you to do that? We were actually talking just before you came on air a bit about Jessie Nelson leaving Little Mix for her mental health. People are way more aware of it now, aren't they? And I guess the show were happy for you to do that.
Yeah, it was. I think at the first stage when I did say it, they didn't really understand. I think they were like, oh no, but we, you know, can you dip in and out? Can you do this? And they were still asking me to, you know, and like, I mean, like Bobby, you would understand, you know, being on a TV reality show like that, it is very hard to detach yourself sometimes because, you know, you're given so much of your life on that show to completely say, not goodbye, but completely say, look, guys, give me a break. You know, producers and the TV network are going to, but they still, because if you're a big foundation on the show, they want you to be present. And I get, and I love that, you know, it's always lovely to know that you're wanted and, you know, you have a big part on the show. But I think we had a lot of back and forth and it got to one meeting where I was like, look, guys, I'm going to be completely honest with you. I just need to do this for my mental health. I just need to have this step back. And as soon as I said that, they completely understood. They were like, okay, look, you know, enjoy this. And hopefully please come back. And I was like, okay, we'll chat to you in the new year.
No, I'm just so right. I think a lot of people wouldn't really know that the behind the scenes, what goes into a reality show, such as Made in Chelsea, Tower, and all them kind of things, because you really are living and breathing life through the show as well, and especially if you're going through relationship issues and breakups, it just becomes, which are hard enough for anyone in any job, but let alone them playing it out on camera, and then it becomes a really strange situation, doesn't it?
Yeah, it almost, I don't want to say necessarily you lose yourself, but you kind of get to a stage where, because everything is happening so quickly, and like, you know, as you said, like, you know, you're playing out real raw emotions with people that you're in love with, your friendships, and you've got to wait until you film, you've got to do scenes that can go for hours, and then you get home and you're just like, wow, what has happened today? I'm exhausted. And you're emotionally exhausted, you know, and I find it really funny because a lot of people who watch reality, they go, oh, that's an easy life. And don't get me wrong, there are some huge perks of being on reality. Literally, and I will never say a bad word about it because, you know, I wouldn't be here today and I love it. But I think there's a lot of things that people don't see, and it's hugely with the mental health side. And I think it's been a lot more spoken about. And I really love the fact that a lot of us are talking about it a bit more.
Do you, with that in mind, are you planning on returning for another series?
So, don't know how much I'm allowed to say.
That makes me think yes.
Let me just read over my contract. So, look, I'm not going to lie. Yeah, I have. I'm thinking of definitely coming back. I've had a very nice kind of open conversation with the show last week. You know, they're talking about the new series, and yeah, I think. I think you hopefully there might be a return of Miles on the show.
Okay, well,
that's how I'm saying.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
And we are back. We're back live. We're not live for a pre-recording and in the studio. We're not in the studio. We're in our home, so I'm in my living room and Nat is in his washroom. And we're joined now over Zoom by legendary boxing promoter Eddie Hearn. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm just trying to find out what this light's doing over my head. Feels like sort of, you know, I've been
summoned
down.
It looks like you've come here.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I think it looked good.
Yeah,
you look angelic.
I'm in the bubble. You know, we've got a big fight this Saturday, and I'm in the bubble, which is something that we're having to create now, all live sports events, which is very costly and very socially disruptive. But we all come in and test before we're allowed to socialise. So
bubble work? So how many people are in the bubble?
So a bubble works. So you turn up, you go into a room, you get tested. You're not allowed to see anyone, talk to anyone. Then you're given your room key. You go into your room. And you wait for the results. And it normally takes sort of between 8 or 10 hours. We have done now 720 tests. Only 2 people have tested positive, and I was one of them.
Oh, wow.
About 3 or 4 weeks ago. So I was over the moon with that one. So, you know, it's a very costly experience, but unfortunately an absolute necessity now for live events.
How did you find having COVID?
I didn't feel great. I mean, I felt like I had a bad, you know, really bad cold, sort of, you know, the kind of cold that you'd tell people was flu, but actually wasn't really flu. But on this occasion, it was actually COVID-19. The worst thing was I gave it to my dad, who's 72. And he laughed and said, I can't believe it. I gave you an empire and you gave me COVID-19. So he wasn't particularly happy with that. But he's all right now. He's back in the saddle. So we're all hopefully fully recovered.
Perfect. Yeah, that's great.
To be honest with you, I've enjoyed the challenge of producing live sports content behind closed doors, because over the years we've built boxing on the back of live crowds, you know, the ring walk, Sweet Caroline, you know, the buzz and the thrill of fight night, and now we're having to deliver something very different, but it's an interesting challenge.
Does that affect the actual boxers? Not
they
having an
say
audience?
No. They say that when the bell goes and you know, if someone's trying to take your head off, you know, you switch on quite quickly. But I look at the Premier League, you know, and all these big football games that are taking part, and when they walk out and there's no one there, how do you achieve that peak performance? Hmm. And I think that's one of the challenges.
I guess Nick's both come from a stand-up background, and so if we went out there and there was no one laughing, it does affect our performance.
Yeah. You get that a lot?
For years.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
I've had 10 years of it. But I suppose the difference between, like, football and boxing is that football, you know, boxing's one-on-one, and so there's never a point when you're not kind of, like,
switched on.
Yeah, totally focused. There's, yeah. I know I'm not really that sporty, but when I played football, I did a lot of standing around watching other people kick the ball. But I've boxed as well, and when you're boxing, you're incredibly sort of like focused and switched on, and it's almost like the outside world is completely pushed.
Well, you're fighting for your life, aren't you? I mean, that's the reality of it. I mean, it's very, very dangerous, and in a team sport like football, you know, I guess there are hiding places. And there's no hiding place in the ring. I mean, that's for sure. So, you know, that's what I love about the sport. I think it's one of the most thrilling sports, you know, you could ever watch, you could ever be around. Of course, it's incredibly dangerous at the same time. But, yeah, you're right. You know that you're, you know, someone's trying to knock you unconscious. So you're going to be switched on.
Mm.
Are you doing things to replace that show feel? Are you able to do anything around it?
Yeah, I think a lot is about just, you know, the perception and the feel. You know, even in this bubble here, you know, we've got media rooms and sort of, you know, we've even got a darts area. You know, we had a karaoke session in the last one. You know, we just want to create an interesting bubble that we can actually create great content from as well. I think for any sport to thrive, you need great personalities. And in boxing, there's so many great personalities and so many great stories. But you have to give a chance for people to see that. And when you're following around all day with a camera and you're watching them mess around, you know, when we had the one in the summer, we was having cricket matches and, you know, all of a sudden you got some bloke coming in from Chicago, you know, trying to bowl to some bloke, you know, from Belgium, and neither of them have ever played cricket before. And it's just, you know, it's just good content. And that's what we are, you know, we're content creators, we're storytellers. And every one of these fighters has a great personality, and personalities are what build the sport and get people interested to watch.
Exactly. I always think that. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not a big person that watches a lot of sport, but what I do like personalities. And so something like in football, you do have people like, you know, Ian Wright or Gazza or something, and that makes it more interesting.
Roy Keane.
Yeah,
for people. Yeah, but Roy Keane, you know, yeah, of course, of course. I mean, look at snooker in the 80s, you know, when my old man was involved in the explosion of that sport. I mean, look back at the characters. You know, Alex Higgins, Willie Thorne, Tony Meo. Remember Bill Werbenick drink 12 pints, you know, during the game. Kirk Stevens dressed in all white. Steve Interesting Davis. Dennis Taylor with his glasses upside down. You knew them all, didn't you? Because they all had their own individual characters and personalities. Yeah. And sport can become quite robotic at times because there's so much money involved now. People don't want to mess around. They don't want to show you their personality and have a laugh. They want to practice and sleep. You know, bugger off. I'm here to win the money. Thank you very much. Goodbye. You know, back in the old days, I mean, look at football. You know, when you read the stories about, you know, the sort of drinking culture, if you like, at Manchester United with like Brian Robson and Norman Whiteside and Paul McGrath. I mean, it was mad to think they'd turn up for games hungover. Do you know what I mean? Like, all going, oh, how you feeling? That was a heavy night. I mean, they're going out to play in the Premiership. It's sure. Bizarre, but the stories and the personalities, you know, that's what you miss in a way. So I do think it's important to get that mix, probably not in a pub, though.
No, but that sort of happened with comedy over the last 20 years where it became, it wasn't sort of, I think there was quite a big drinking culture around comedy, and then it became kind of like a business and people sort of realised that, oh, this could actually be a career. And then all of a sudden, people stopped going out into the bars and drinking and everything, and people started taking it seriously and just like, I'm going to go home and write my material. So it's kind of like, it's a parallel.
But do you think that takes the fun out of it? I mean, you know,
absolutely.
I think that everyone faces the problem, don't they? When they become like, I imagine it's the same with comedy. And you must look at people who, you know, who have made it on a small hall scene and have been absolutely hilarious and end up doing a, you know, taking a presenting role or something. And, you know, everybody intrinsically within the industry looks at them and goes, what a sellout. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
But that happens in every industry, doesn't it? I mean, you know, I get a cue when I did the big YouTube fight last year between Jake Paul and KSI. It was huge. But, you know, the hardcore boxing fan said, oh, what is he doing? You know, I'm just trying to grow the sport. But the problem is when you become success, the reason you become successful in any industry is because there's more interest in what you're doing. And if there's more interest, there's going to be more opportunity and there's going to be more money. Unfortunately, the more money will come with the mainstream gigs and the mainstream activities that someone as passionate about, you know, you guys, what you do, ultimately that can potentially lead to a bastardization of what you're doing.
Your book is about success, isn't it, that you're promoting?
Yeah.
It's relentless, 12 rounds of success, but it's sort of about your life, right? But it's also about how to achieve success. Is that right?
It is. And actually I wrote it during lockdown because I had a lot of time on my hands. And it was kind of quite therapeutic for me because when we talk about success, it was like, you know, I used to be in a rat race. You know, I was just so caught up in the hustle of what I was trying to do. It was only really when lockdown came around that I sort of sat back and said, finally, what have you been doing for the last 3 years? You haven't stopped, you know, and sometimes that can lead to you being a bit of an arsehole, can lead to you being a bad parent or, you know, a bad husband because you're so driven with these targets all the time. And then you start thinking about, actually, success doesn't equal happiness. You know, same with you guys, you know, or we go back to that comedian. They can love what they do. You know, they're in that little club having a few pints, get up on stage, and they walk off with such a wonderful buzz. And all of a sudden, they start to get recognised. Then they're presenting a series on Channel 4, but actually they're thinking, this just ain't me. You know, so is that success? You can only establish what success is. And it's different for every single individual, you know. But the book's quite funny because, you know, it talks about my early life and then it talks about what I feel you need, you know, to establish. And it all comes from passion for what you do, because without that love of what you do, it's impossible to put in the kind of mindset and work ethic needed. But relentless is something that it's a word that me and my dad use a lot because, yeah, all right, we think we're quite sharp, not geniuses in the slightest, but we will never, ever be outworked. You know, we love what we do. We have a passion for what we do, and we are constantly working and evolving. But as the book goes on through the pandemic, it's kind of like, look, this is what you need to achieve, but don't forget be happy. You know, like what you determine is success. Ian Boltzmann.
Richard here.
Hello, Richard.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm nice. It's nice. It's a nice place.
You're nice. That's a very arrogant way to start a conversation. How are you?
I'm nice.
I'm very nice. You get along just fine with me. Richard Herring, you've come in.
Yes, hello.
I've just dragged you in for a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that like for a little bit, so don't be getting comfortable.
Okay.
Don't get your feet under the table or nothing. But I just saw you at King's Cross Station.
Yeah.
What are your skills, Richard Herring?
Being a good dad, being a sensitive lover.
What would make you a sensitive lover?
Just kissing them a bit before it.
Do you? Do you kiss your wife before you put it
a
in?
A bit. Yeah,
just for a bit. Do you ever carry on kissing once it's in there? No, never. Because you're concentrating then, aren't you?
Yeah.
And obviously, I would imagine at that point, because I see you very much as missionary.
Yeah.
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 I'm a bad guy.
Ian
a bad
can't
guy.
Do missionary because he hasn't got strong arms. Okay. He said that a few times.
I mean, I might have said it in passing, but
no, you said
I don't
it
recall saying it.
You've
I didn't think it would come back and bite me on the arse
no,
in that
said
way.
You've quite a lot. Your arms, the strength isn't
My arms
great.
Are very strong.
I've sometimes done both of the positions.
So. Are they on the same go?
Yeah, both.
Have you? Do you move around? So I don't want, and again, you know, I know you miss, so I don't want to implicate her. Let's talk about previously in the olden days. Are you a great mover around in the bedroom gymnastics?
Yes, I go, you know, sometimes go over the other corner and have a look from there.
I stay one position, mate.
Do you?
Yeah.
You don't move?
Well, do you know what? at my age now, I'll move for a bit.
Right.
Some people like, you know, like that serial killer just liked people to be very still, didn't he? So some people
Christy,
like...
Christy, was it
yeah,
that one?
Where? No, it was...
Jeffrey Dahmer?
No, it was, the one from up here. He was the one who worked for the DHSS. And I can't think of his name.
It's certainly the right member of the family that's doing the crime. Because this would be unbearable.
This would be terrible. You know,
well,
what's his face?
Killer.
He was he liked guys to be just still, so he would kill them, put them in the bath, and Dennis Nielsen.
Okay, so wasn't Christie in love about Dennis Nielsen? Was that not that?
No, okay. Christie's.
Yeah, hit them in the walls, didn't he? Wellington Place. Yeah.
This is lovely, isn't it?
My wife's talked about him in what I like about the drunk women fight crime, talk about crime,
solving crime
podcast is not the name. What I like
what she
is
she really likes Richard Herring's square of the Leicester podcast radio show.
Is they don't really know very much about crime, so they cover quite big stories as if they've not heard them before. So they did Christie, they did D.B. Cooper, who's the guy who jumped out of the plane in America with the parachute, you know, hijacked the plane.
I think we spoke about that, didn't we?
Because
Johnny came in. No, we did. Vegas came in during their interview.
Oh, that's right.
And we
yeah.
spoke about that because he was asking about how all that.
But
happened.
They're quite big cases, but then that's quite good fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But my question was, Richard.
Yep.
When you're having sex,
yeah.
do you move about a lot? Or do you... Here's what I would do, normally.
Should I just show you what I do? Yeah,
well, I've got a good imagination, though. I think I would lie on my back, right?
Yeah.
Because I think that's fair. I'm a big bloke.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I lie on my back.
Weak arms.
I haven't got weak arms, really, but I don't want to get exhausted in sex.
Right.
It should be an enjoyable thing. It shouldn't feel like exercise. So I'll do, like, pushing up from the... From a flat position, you know what people say? Oh, you're on your back, you've done nothing. So I do. That's harder, that. Yeah, I do like.
The lifting?
I lift up my bum off the bed. And,
so why don't you just put a pillow under it? Be a bit elevated.
Because then it'll always be up there, won't it?
Well, you've got to come down again as well.
Start going in and out. So I'd definitely do that.
Yeah.
I'm quite happy doing all the stuff, you know, with your mouth and all that.
Kissing.
On the downstairs.
Okay.
I'll happily do that all night.
Okay.
On your own one or on their one?
Ideally on my own. But I think beyond that now, I think the older I've got, I'm not really... I don't really going like... Oh,
I'd like to
up.
Mix it up and do... sometimes just lie there.
Yeah.
Let them do a bit.
Do you know why I'm asking you?
Yeah, no, I don't.
Because we're the same proportions.
Okay.
You and I, and we've talked about this for years, we are the same proportions.
Yeah.
Like, we have the same long body, short legs, same inside leg.
Yeah.
Same hair, you copied mine.
Yeah. True.
So I wonder, I find, and it's girls talk really this, but I find that if I'm, say, behind someone,
yeah,
really struggle with that.
Yeah.
Because I have to go tiptoes.
Well, if they stand, just get them to, you know.
That's what I think. But the amount of times I've gone go a bit lower, it's like as if they can't or somewhere.
But you can kneel on the bed, and then they can, and then your legs aren't important.
I wouldn't risk this on the bed.
Get a step. Stand on something.
I think I might have to get a step.
Yeah.
Kneel down on the bed.
Come. But even that's. So does that work out fine in your relationship?
Yeah, that's lovely.
Do you not feel bad having this conversation? I do.
No.
I've literally just spoke to Katie just now at King's Cross, so she couldn't wait to leave. Honestly, it was
bizarre. She didn't come across, did she?
Really?
No, Rich came over and he said, oh, she's over there somewhere.
Oh.
And then she was dashing off. Said, I've got to go.
She was dashing off to a very important meeting. She's changed since she's had a successful podcast.
Yeah.
You know.
I thought it was because...
We've been working in podcasts for years. She just waltzes in. Bang.
Isn't that depressing?
Yeah, it's awful.
I think it was because you didn't want to arrive at the same time at the Leicester Square Theatre. I think you are still carrying on as if as if there's no element of getting people on your podcast who you know. That's what I reckon.
I do. I guess it'll be hard to get away.
I reckon you stayed up late last night talking about it. And she said, I don't want to just arrive with you. I'm not just being your girlfriend. I think she said that. And you were like, but darling, we're married. She went, in name. Am I right, Richard?
Yes, more or less.
All right. What are you doing for the rest of the day?
I'm going to go and have some lunch, which I would have been having now. But
don't
be
like that.
20 past two. I mean, it's too late for lunch now.
Now, hang on a minute. Did I come and get you, or was I just walking along through King's Cross, minding my own business, and you shouted my name across King's Cross, that square bit?
Then you said you have to come on the podcast.
I didn't say you have to. I said I'm going to have to go in a minute because you were banging on about... telling me all sorts of private things about himself that I can't talk about. That was like, I've already sworn to secrecy. And then my mouth was going, you are going to say it now. You're going to say it. Stop. He did that, and then I went, I'm going to have to go into my radio show. And he looks really... You did look forlorn when I said that to him.
No, I just had something. It was nice to talk to someone.
Yeah, he looks nice.
I only talked to my wife, my kids and my dog. And that's it. I'm out in the countryside now.
I've told you can message me anytime, Richard. No. I've told you can call me anytime. That's absolutely fine.
Okay.
Anytime. Up to 10 PM at night. After 3 PM and up to 10 PM, you can call me anytime. And if I'm free, I will answer.
Okay.
You're quite good at replying. I'll give you that.
At replying?
Yeah.
Do you think?
Yeah. Some people are quite bad at replying and take like weeks, whereas you generally do it within an hour. It's good.
I feel obliged to do it. I had this discussion recently with someone about that I get stressed by it as well. I'm the sort of person that will look at me and go, I wish they'd fucking stop messaging me constantly. Like, see how he's being unprofessional on his phone now. But I do, I feel I have to reply. I couldn't just leave it. But yeah, I have people that I talk to who wouldn't reply for days, sometimes weeks. Well, I'm going to, if you want to go, you can go. If you're going to stay, you can stay.
I've got to go and prepare for my own...
Can I write some questions for it?
Can you write some questions for my podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah, but adults aren't very good at it. I think you might be quite good at coming up with questions.
I've got one for Katie.
Okay. I'll ask her about...
Ask her to
I'll ask her all about it tonight.
Ask her. Please make that the first question.
If you were making love to Ian Boldsworth...
Yeah.
I'll do that.
.. Well, thank you for coming out, Rich.
No, thank you for having me. It's been nice to come back to FUBAR.
It has, yeah.
I used to have a show on here.
You did? You didn't last very long, though, did you?
No, I didn't. I had to go.
How long were you
here
for?
It was quite... It felt like
about
a long
five
time.
5 weeks. It wasn't.
I think it was about 6 or 7 months.
Mm. It was rubbish, though.
It was.
And it was Richard and Lou, and they're both good, but it was dreadful, actually.
How many did you listen to? None.
I was on most
I know,
of them.
That's probably... Well, that one
kept
was
kept getting
rubbish.
Phone calls, we couldn't be a guest on Richard's show. Someone else has pulled out.
Yeah,
so
that's probably exactly what happened, yeah.
I think you should work more with Lou Sanders. I thought you were good to
go. Yeah, she's good. She's doing very well, though. You know, she's too big to work with me now. That's the problem.
Just have to
wait for to hit the heights and on the way down again.
Do you know what, Richard?
Yeah.
You and I are alike in so many ways.
Yeah.
Always people going off.
Oh.
It's all right, mate. We should do something together one day. Not soon.
I'm going.
Bye.
I'm leaving.
Right, bye.
Thanks. Nice to be on the show.
All right, thanks. Bye.
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 Harriet Rose on FUBAR Radio.
Alakai Harley, welcome back to FUBAR Radio.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Honestly, lovely to have you. You came in on Michael and Marcel's show before, didn't you? Did you have a good time?
That was amazing.
Did they look after you?
Yeah, they did.
I'm going to have to talk straight away about what we've just been chatting about. Like, because like you were just saying with live sets and stuff, even when things go wrong... You have to just like you're there to make it happen.
Exactly.
Does that feel like something before you go on stage? Do you kind of get that feeling of like, oh, this, like a, I guess a heavy pressure? Mm-hmm.
I think definitely, but I think every artist gets that. Mm-hmm. But for me, I just kind of pray. And the ones I pray, I'm just like, it's supposed to end how it's supposed to end. I just make sure I give it everything I've got on that stage. I can't leave and be annoyed with my performance because the only person I can blame is myself.
Yeah.
You know, so I just go out and shell regardless. There was 1 year though, but that 1 year it was pouring with rain. And I remember I was in costume and they didn't have my bottoms or my top, one out of two, but I was in costume and it was like, obviously you got not paint. I didn't have paint on me. Some people had paint on them though from the morning. And I had all the glitter and stuff and the way, but it was a different kind of pool. It was like rain, like we were swimming. And like, I started caring at the start and then I realised everyone around me didn't care.
No.
I'm the only person trying to be cute right now. And the minute I let go, we were just dirty. We were just there. Like, as in when I'm saying dirty, I mean hygiene-wise.
Yeah, no, yeah, yeah.
Mud and all of that stuff, yeah. And just brucking out, skinning out all the way. And it was good, a great time.
But I think once you let go, you can't enjoy yourself. And I guess, in a way, that's kind of what you're saying about your live show, is that, like, you just got to let go and have a good time.
So you can enjoy yourself fast.
Yeah, because if you're sat there on stage being pissed off about how wet it is, you know, no one's having a good time. But I feel like that's an energy that you don't ever bring anyway when you perform.
No. I try not to, except for when it's actually wet on the floor, because that's the problem.
That's scary.
The problem is, because my problem is not slipping in front of everyone, because that goes viral. I've got the music to back it for me. That's cool. That part, no, we cheat. That part's cool. But what I'm scared of is the pain.
Yes.
For me pulling something.
Yeah. Because it's like, I've got to your bum, I need to continue. It would hurt.
Exactly. And I need to continue performing. So that's the problem. I don't want to hurt myself before I finish.
And we've all seen all of the stars fall. Yeah. We've seen Madonna get whipped off stage. Yeah. We've seen Beyonce bow down. We've seen it all.
The fan, and then she sang about, she's a G. She sang about the fan.
But yeah, I mean, that's the point. You've got to own it when it happens, you know? So you're off to the studio after this to kind of finish off stuff. Let's talk a little bit about the remix too. I mean, oh my days. Kojo Funds.
Yes.
What? But also, as soon as it dropped, everybody went nuts. You went to Jamaica to shoot the vid, which was, by the way, is beautiful.
Thank you so much.
You must have had the most incredible time, because it's going, obviously, it's going back to your roots as well. So did that hold a special place in your heart?
Definitely. The first time I shot a video was for Nardan. And so then to come back and shoot, and when I shot Nardan, it was the first time I went back to Jamaica since I came here when I was younger.
Really?
So going back the second time now, to when I did Rushing, it was just like, I'm here, and I just felt good and, you know, really empowered. It's always great.
And the fact that it's like such a, it's a 360 in the sense that, like, you're coming all the way back, but look at what you've done in that time.
Exactly.
That is crazy.
That's what it was for me. That's what it is.
But, I mean, like, in terms of the actual process, what made you kind of put the remix out? What made you, how did you get involved with Kojo? Like, what was the process? Was it all sort of like, because I know sometimes it comes through managers.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a link up. Like, how did it all happen?
This one is kind of a bit of a, it's kind of both ways, actually, because I did the Kojo tour, the Golden Boy tour. Mm-hmm. So I was on tour with Kojo for all the dates. And he was just so, like, lovely to me, like, just making sure I was good. You know, I was a support act, and not every artist actually cares what the support act's
doing. Sometimes you don't even meet
them. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I'm going to say, but he, like, really, really cared, and he was just really lovely about it, and you could tell that he actually wanted me there to support. And then from there, he actually said, like, let's get something done.
Yes.
And, you know, I'd rush in, and then not too long after that, it could have been a week, and he was in the studio doing Rush In. We were back in the studio together, and we'd finished it. We went to Jamaica. So everything was shot in Jamaica anyway. It was a The remix was shot there all at the same time, and then obviously we dropped the record, and then we dropped the remix, and it's just dope, man. Just shout out to him as well, because he doesn't have to, and he really, you know.
But the thing is, as well, because that's the thing, is I don't like to always ask, you know, artists, because I know obviously you've supported Kojo and Shaka, and like, you don't always want to say, like, is that, did
was
you hook
like?
Up? Yeah, because sometimes it's like, oh, we didn't really talk, and like, because sometimes it can be a bit difficult, but it's really nice to hear that he came and was like, yeah, let's put something together.
No, he was lovely. He was lovely about it.
Well, you can really, you can kind of tell from the video that you guys vibe.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I think he thinks I'm annoying. That's cool. Not like loves me, loves, like, as in,
yeah, but
oh
we're
my
all
god,
an,
that
everyone's
young
annoying.
One, you know, that young one that's just like, oh, she's so cool, so annoying. Like, I can
ball
be
of
very
energy.
Annoying. Exactly. I think that's what it is. I'm just like, yeah, it's, but not every day he was,
but that's what you have to be in this, like, kind of line of work.
Yeah,
like,
I feel crazy.
In terms of, like, meeting people, like, obviously the Kojo tour and everything, you're getting a lot of new fans from doing those support slots. Did you see a real kind of switch when you did both of those, in terms of getting new fans and people coming in and hearing your
definitely,
music for the first time?
Definitely, for both the Shaka tour and the Kojo tour, 100%. I think it's always like that, though, when you go on stage, you know? Like, even if that's not their style of music, Like, you can draw on people. I mean, entertainment is entertainment. If you're entertained and you've drawn them in, and now they're fans. So definitely, like, I see the difference in the growth and, like, people that remember and, you know, and then become your fan because, you know, so definitely.
But I've seen you perform, really help. I've seen you perform live a few times and you've got a real powerful energy on
Thank
stage.
You so much.
And I think that is... Even, I mean, I really like your music, but even, as you say, even if someone is not tapped into the genre or not tapped into the kind of the vibe, I mean, you can't not watch and you can't not have fun because it's positive.
I try.
You know what I mean? No, it's positive.
I try.
It's happy. It's like, also it's a bit sassy and like funny. The lyrically, like, you know, you go everywhere with
it. Yeah, thank you so much.
No, it's a lot of fun to see and it's nice to see the progression as well and how exciting it's getting for you.
Thank you very much.
In terms of like other artists as well, obviously getting in the studio, I know that in terms of writing and stuff, you jump in the studio with people. Is there anyone that you're looking to, like, I really want to work with that person, I'd love to support them, I'd love to do a track with them?
Oh,
because I know that in the industry right now there's so many people, girls as well, smashing it.
There's 100%, there's so much people smashing it at the minute. Actually, I always say Butcher Banton, I need to put this out there because he needs to hear, and I don't know where he is listening. He might be listening here, so
he might be.
Butcher, it's definitely someone that I want to work with. Rhett is someone I want to work with, also phenomenal. I think he's absolutely amazing. It's so crazy because I'm yet to like actually do something with like in terms of like the females that are really shutting it down now.
Yeah, I really want to see you do something with
who are you going to say?
Well, basically, because obviously there's a lot of I really liked when Steph Mabel and Ray did a track.
Oh, that was sick.
Because there was three girls on one track, all from London.
Yeah,
and I felt like that vibe and that energy was really sick. So I want to see that more, like multiple girls, you know, getting in the studio together and making a track and like. I do think someone like Mabel or Ray would be sick because
sick
a vocal that. Next to it would be like just a different kind of vocal and different kind of energy.
Definitely, 100%. I think definitely for me, Ray Black would be.
Oh my god, yeah,
and Banks.
That is exactly like. Oh my god, that would be. See, that's it.
I feel like
Ray Black, you, Miss Banks.
Yeah, I feel
boom.
Like that works as well. That would really
the energy hit. As well. There.
I just don't like. For me, the only thing is that, you know, with the whole female thing, when they do that, different people. I don't want it to be like, oh. And my gosh, girl power. Like, that is what it is, but, like, we don't have to, like, really say just, like, smother it all over there because then it becomes, like, cheesy.
Yeah.
So I want it to be, like, forget the gender for a second. Obviously, people are going to talk about it, but not, like, state it. You know what I mean? Like, just make it an amazing... It's a hit.
So,
and it's a hit because it's a hit, not because we're girls.
But that is really interesting what you've just said, because a lot of people feel like that... I'm a DJ, but I call myself a female DJ because it's putting me in a niche that like is beneficial for me. But it's interesting that you don't want to use that niche because you're like, nah, we're just good quality performers and artists.
Yeah, because I feel like I'm not being funny. Like, obviously with me, I'm very like I understand. Obviously, there's all about growth, and that's just what I believe in, growth and taking it on your time. However, I'm 100% sure I can spin a lot of men. That's a fact.
Yes, yes.
So it's like, and this is what I know. I know this with all my heart. Like, I know it, we know it, you know it too. So it's just like, when it's like, it's very easy to put it into this female thing to take the pressure. But it's like, no, I want all the smoke. Like, let's really just actually put me in the world of people, human beings. You know what I mean? And put us all in the same race because I can still win. Like, and that's just going for war, females. I feel like we can still win regardless. It doesn't have to be that we have to have our little section of females and males. Nah.
That's, I didn't even want to talk then for a sec because that is so, no, but it just really is. Yeah. It's inspiring to hear you speak like that because you're totally right.
Yeah,
there's nothing about what you're saying that is incorrect. Like, there's nothing wrong with promoting female empowerment and being, because like, it's totally good. I definitely do it. I talk about the fact that I'm a female DJ or whatever, but actually. Going into the runway, what you're actually basically saying is, I could go up against anybody, irrelevant of their gender, and I could fucking bring it.
Yeah.
But also, it's just irrelevant. Don't like make it a factor in this situation. It's not girls versus boys.
Exactly.
It's me versus you. You know, not literally me, but not me versus you. Because
I know
I will lose.
No, don't say that. Reggie knows the way you said it when you say it. He was like, I like that line. I need to find that for a while. It's not girls versus boys. It's me versus everyone. I'm joking. It's not that. I'm just bannering. But you get anyone with sense gets what we're trying to say, basically.
But it's it's a really good, and it's a great thing to hear from you. And it's just great to see where your career is going, because it's just going strength to strength.
Amen.
What's the dream for kind of the next year? Like, where do you see Ooh. Yourself next year? Is there something specific you want to achieve by next year?
I want to get awards, you know. Yep. I do want to be in the charts, definitely a top 10.
Yep.
Number one would be great.
Yeah. let's shoot for number one.
You know what? Regardless, for me, I feel like I can't tell you what I want for next year. I know people are supposed to put out goals and stuff like that. Every time I go to do it, I'm just like, oh, I don't have the time, and then I forget and blah, blah, and I forget where the paper is that I wrote it on. So it's like long. But I know what I want for like the end. I know that sky's the limit, and I'm just going to keep going and going and going and going. There's no like, oh, I want to do that. I just want to go as much as I can.
Lucy Porter on FUBAR Radio.
The upbeat Ali doing his thing. Lucy Porter here with the special lady time. And excitingly, we have now someone who I almost feel has been on the show before. And
that's the worst introduction I've ever had.
I think I can turn this around. I think you're going to be flattered. So Evelyn was in doing the show, and we were talking about you, Sophie Hagen, and that's who
Hi.
It is.
Hi, you snuck that Hagen. In there.
I know. I'll do a proper introduction in a minute. But I think I only did it once, but I called Evelyn Sophie. So you are clearly the dominant in my mind.
We get that. So it's me, Evelyn Mark, and Ingrid Dahl, she's in Brighton. So Ingrid is a chubby Norwegian comedian, and Evelyn is a chubby Swedish comedian. And I'm Danish, so we get that. Like I was booked for a TV thing a while back, and the producer wrote me and said, oh my God, we just love that bit. We want you to do this bit on TV, the bit about the trousers. You know the bit you do about the trousers? And I was like, that's Ingrid. That's Ingrid. And there was a promoter once said to me, look, we'd never book Sophie, but we'd totally book you. And I was like, yeah, I'm Sophie.
Oh my
it's
goodness.
Evelyn you want to book. So we get it all the time.
Oh, my
all
goodness. Well, I feel in a way better and in a way worse saying that. They'll go for worse. I feel terrible now.
You should mostly feel bad about having booked Evelyn before me.
I know. Well, that's very true, actually. She was awful.
Yes, she's terrible, isn't she?
We would never book Sophie again.
I used to live with Evelyn, so I can say everything because I know everything I say is true.
Yes, exactly. When you've lived with someone, that there is nothing like the kind of bitterness and resentment that can build up due to domestic issues that
lots
then spills out. It's great. Oh, good. Oh, well, more of that later. That'd be very nice. Although, actually, it must be quite good if the three of you are interchangeable. If there's ever a gig that you simply can't be asked to do, send along another Scandi-Nordic. Whatever
Scandi-Nordic,
Scandi-Nordic, one of the Scandi-Nordics.
I think we're already kind of doing that. Like, Evelyn is the first person I suggest if I can't make a gig. I don't think I'm the person she sends, but because she's not a good person. She's a horrible, horrible human being.
The awful Evelyn Mock. Well, I used to have that with Joe Enright, who is physically very similar to me. But sounds nothing like, she's from Birmingham and I am not, and I've been mistaken for her a lot. And also Nina Conti I used to get, which I found very flattering in a sort of physical way and a comedic way indeed.
I can kind of see that, but Evelyn's Chinese. She's actually Chinese. There's not much getting out of that, is there?
Did you not know that you've got that syndrome where you don't realise you're Chinese? Is that what it is?
I've always been told I look like I was from Greenland.
Okay.
That's because Denmark own Greenland, so it's like we don't want to get into that, by the way.
Do you know territorial disputes in the Northern Hemisphere? Let's do that. We're doing thorny stuff. When we have the PIMS, then that's when we get into the thorny topics. But it's lovely to have you with us.
No, thank you.
And because we've only gigged together like once, I think. So
when was that? Must have been ages ago.
It was a long time ago. How long have you been over in this country?
About 3 years now. Okay. I started coming over 3 years ago, and then I moved here September 2.5 years ago.
Okay, yes. Yeah. And go back to Denmark a lot?
Yeah, I do. It's too much, I think, because I like being here, and it feels like I'm cheating by constantly going back, staying with my mom.
Oh, we don't begrudge it. You're allowed to do that.
That's sure, I'm missing out a bit.
In fact, it's
fine.
Quite good, because I was reminded by Amanda that you will be able to chip in on the first story that we're going to talk about today has relevance to Denmark as well as to here, because I want to talk about the Ikke Mikkel a baby. The wiggle baby. Do you know there was a baby?
No, I haven't heard anything
the
about that.
The wiggle baby. There's a wiggle baby. No, I know. It could.
They should mention it more, shouldn't
there's
they?
There's also an election coming up, but those are two things.
Let's go back to the baby.
So the baby, well, you know, I'm not going to dwell on the baby. Perfectly pleasant looking baby, which I know will. But anyway, but the thing that interested me about it was there was mention made in the media of the fact that they've changed the rules of succession in the British royal family so that now she will be, this princess will be third in line to the throne?
Yes.
No, fourth.
Oh, fourth. We keep forgetting
that Charles, I know, that is a terrible thing, isn't it? That we keep going, oh, he's still there, isn't he?
Bad Brits.
Oh, God, he's still there. But yes, that once that one and the other one and another one have had a go, then she might get to have a go. Anyway, but what fascinated me about it, not fascinated, but what I found mildly interesting about it was that that has only been the case incredibly recently that women have had any rights of succession. But then I was reading about the primogenitor. I'm saying that it just, I always want to say primogenitals. it's not, you know, that's not, I think, unreasonable. But, so, yes, this idea that boys, the oldest boy inherits everything in the British aristocracy. And I didn't realise that is still very much the case for posh people, because there's a case going through the courts at the moment, which I'm now desperately trying to Google live on air, of Lucinda Lambton, who's a writer and broadcaster, and her older brother inherited their father was this sort of eccentric peer and, you know, this very rich lord who he was disgraced due to scandals involving prostitutes and drugs and things. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. But
yeah, skip over the interesting stuff.
Yeah, that's all the interesting bit. But so his eldest son inherited everything. And his sisters have been taking him to court in Italy for quite some time because part of the estate is in Italy. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. But I just thought it was absolutely incredible that huge swathes of our poshos are still leaving everything to their oldest sons and nothing to any daughters. And it did make me think about the Danish royal family that I know nothing about. Are they a groovy, you know,
they kind of are. I mean, I don't know much about them because I don't really care, but I did find out, someone told me that your queen, I don't want to say
Elizabeth.
The queen.
Our queen Elizabeth.
A queen, your queen. Apparently, she smokes, and that's like a huge secret. Where our queen, the real queen, she does it everywhere in public. Like, she doesn't give a shit.
Does she? Yeah. What's her name?
Margaret? Question mark? Margaret. Queen
Margaret.
Okay.
Does she have to go outside to smoke? Or is she allowed to smoke inside because she's the queen?
I think she can smoke everywhere she wants.
She can smoke anywhere she wants.
Yeah. Wow. And she does it and it's like she smiles and like big yellow black teeth. And the prince, he's the crown prince? You call him that?
I
directly
know,
translate, who cares?
Yeah.
Joachim, I think. Oh God, it's so embarrassing if I get this wrong. He's like a Navy SEAL kind of guy, like army person. And he's like, they've all finished like university and stuff, so they're quite like, you feel like you can go and have a drink with them.
Yeah.
So I'm sure people do. Like, it's just very down to earth. We have kind of a lot of like humility about like this whole no one's better than anyone else, which is kind of
quite right.
Sounds good, doesn't it? That's why, because every time this comes up, everyone always says, well, I suppose it would be nice to have a Scandinavian star royal family where, you know, they cycle on bikes and they just do normal things.
And that's exactly the image I have.
And they're just very normal. Exactly. You just think they're cycling. And I wouldn't have pictured them chain smoking. I like the fact good on you, Margaret.
Yeah, and there was a recent huge thing that happened with the Queen in Denmark where there's a reporter who's asked her a question, and instead of saying, oh God, you call it the same thing, don't you? Like you with a big Y, and then like, how do you say that? You know, you're dressed like royalty. Used the informal.
Okay,
where he was like, hey, where did you, blah, blah. And she just stopped him and she went, listen, we didn't go to school together. How the fuck do you think you're... Sorry for swearing.
No swearing is good. Much encouraged.
So she just completely stepped out of that queen character.
Especially when you're pretending to be a queen.
You're talking to me. I am the queen. She said, we didn't go to school together, did we? And he was like, no, I'm so sorry, Your Majesty. I'm so terribly sorry.
Nice.
So it's quite cool. It's quite tough.
See, that is exactly what we need. Because there has been... you know, the hoo-has involving our Queen recently. There was one where there was a documentary that portrayed her in an unflattering light and someone got sacked for it. I think quite a lot of people got sacked for that at the BBC, didn't they?
Not the one where she was supposed to have gone out
she
dancing.
Huffed. The one where she huffed out of a room and they said, oh, it was bad.
That was because of a mis-edit, wasn't it? They edited it to make it look like that she
was in a huff, yes.
Wasn't that when Rolf Harris pointed her picture, though? So
okay, yes. Yeah. So maybe she knew something the rest of us didn't. Well, but then also someone put their arm around her and then there was a bit of a fuss about that. But
wasn't
she
that so cosy?
Could have been. I think Michelle Obama put her arm around her as well, and people were sort of up in arms about it. And it's like, because we have these awful sycophants, and that's what I dislike about the royal family particularly, is the hangers-on and the lickspittles. You know who you are, Nicholas Witchell, frankly, but, you know, those sort of... You just go, oh, God, it's all right for them. They're having an amazing time, but why do you hang around fawning over them?
Yeah, why are you...
And, you know, and so it's just terrible that Michelle Obama put her arm around the Queen at Thrall. Because it's like, well, if anyone has a problem with it, it should be the Queen. She should have punched her. That's fine. That's fine. The Queen wants to punch anyone in the face.
It would have started a war.
It would have started a war.
America's history and your history, that would have been a war.
Access all areas on FUBAR Radio.
We've got Mr. Perez Hilton. I think he's here waiting to speak to us now.
Hello. Perez. How are you?
We're really good. How are you?
I'm looking forward to this and being present and in the moment. How are things in the UK?
it's been a strange year, but people's health is a priority, you know, and that has to come first.
Are the gyms open? Are you able to go to the gym?
Nah, that's the one thing I'm missing the absolute most. These lockdowns, this one has really made me, every day I just want to get to that gym. So that's literally the first thing, because I'm such a big believer. It's so good for people's mental health to be able to train. And that's not necessarily people going and do weights, because whatever people want to do to exercise, whether that's going for a walk, a jog, a run, just getting out and having fresh air, like, it's so important for people's mind to have that, and the endorphins you get from training or doing some form of exercise.
I don't know what it would translate to in stones, but during the first Los Angeles has pretty much been like a nonstop lockdown. I mean, it eased a little bit and now it's back in a more restrictive tier, the purple tier as it's described. But during our initial first 3+ month lockdown, I gained 42 pounds and I used to gym every single day. I just stopped working out. I started to just eat uncontrollably and started to drink daily. And I don't even drink regularly. I go from barely drinking to then drinking daily and then eating my face off. Thank God I've now found an online, an actual, like a Zoom fitness class. So now I'm working out with a live teacher every day, because that's what I needed for me. You know, I know that there's a lot of on-demand services and I would have not done well with that. I would have made excuses. Oh, I can do it later. It's on demand. But with what I'm doing, there's a live person waiting for me and watching me and correcting me and inspiring me. So it's not bad just for kids. Like, I know that so many people are struggling with depression now. And like my mom lives with me and she's a very high risk person, not just because of her age, but also because she has diabetes and she has asthma. And both of those things have her, understandably, and me very concerned. So she doesn't, and I don't leave the house. If you're home 7 days a week, understandably, you're might get depressed. So my mom is, and then her mood rubs off on me and what a year.
Do you know what? And I think the thing is, like you're saying, I don't think anyone should beat themselves up or put pressure on themselves this year, do you know, because it's a year that no one could ever have mentally prepared for. And I think so many people will relate to what you say, that whether it was the first lockdown or the second, where people obviously haven't been able to get out and about, maybe have been isolating with the fridge, which is how I think I was going to get in March. And I think, you know, if people have put on a few pounds here and there, let's not worry about it, guys. There's been so much to worry about this year. If we've all put on a pound here or a pound there, don't be hard on yourself. So what can we do about it?
My concern, though, is like next year. Well, I was very pessimistic about when we would get a vaccine, but it's looking like it might actually end up happening sooner than later. I'm concerned now that we're going to go from one extreme to another, right? Like, this year was so depressed and people were eating and drinking because they were so depressed. Next year, people might be so happy. They might be eating and drinking and drugging or whatever and partying so hard because we couldn't do that for the most part this year. I will be one of those people, not drinking or drugging, but I definitely, like, I will be booking at least 3 to 4 trips to Las Vegas if I've gotten the vaccine and I'm good. Because, you know, like, I've not left my house and I love Vegas.
Can I ask you about your book? I'm really intrigued.
Yes. Oh, my God. Yes.
Yes. Tell us all. Explain. You're going to do a much better job than me. So tell us, what's it about? What's the message?
So I've written several books before, and I had always been asked to write a memoir, but I never thought it was the right time. And now that I am officially, like, not even the grandfather of social media, I am the original influencer. Because there was nobody doing it before me. Mm-hmm. Paris Hilton, whom I love and I named myself after, has incorrectly been going around and calling herself the original influencer. She wasn't. Paris Hilton was born an heiress, chose to then, when she was a teenager, become a socialite, because not every heiress wants to be a socialite. Then, after being a socialite, she chose to be a television star working in the reality genre. Her path to success was a lot more, was traditional. It was a traditional path to success. My entire career is thanks to social and non-traditional media. I was the first. And I'm so grateful to be chatting with you guys. And that 16 years later, people even care enough to devote some time on their show, like you are right now, to have me speak. And that is very telling. I, if you know anything about me, if you watched me on Celebrity Big Brother, or if you've read my blog, or you follow me on Instagram or TikTok or Twitter or Facebook or YouTube or whatever it is, or if you listen to my podcast, you know that I always keep it real. Not just about celebrities, but I also keep it real about myself. And I'm not hot. I'm not an it girl anymore. But I'm still internationally known. I still daily do interviews, even when not promoting my book. People call on me to be an expert and a talking head. And I will always have a career. I have already outlasted not just my social media peers, but I've outlasted many of the celebrities that I started talking about back in 2004 when I began. This is going to sound cocky and conceited, but it's just a fact. Hated as I may be or am, I'm an icon and I'm timeless and I'm like a cockroach. You're never going to get rid of me. So I have a lot of insight to offer because I did it first. I share all of the wild celebrity encounters and stories and relationships that I had, falling outs that I had, mistakes that I made, so that hopefully it can be a great distraction for the reader or the listener. I do the audio version myself. I narrated it. And it's now nostalgic. The beginning of my career is officially now vintage, you know, 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, when people would be reading my website every day to find out the latest on Britney Spears or what was happening with Paris Hilton or Lindsay Lohan or Nicole Richie or whatever it may be. And unlike a lot of today's very popular influencers, where they just hang out with other influencers, I was hanging out and friends with superstars. And kids these days may not know everything that I did, but I did really iconic stuff. I was in a Rihanna music video. I was in a Pussycat Dolls music video. I was on an episode of Glee, opposite Lindsay Lohan. I opened Britney Spears' circus tour for 3 minutes. The montage, the intro video was me and Britney. Like, I've done so much over the last 16 years, and I will continue to do so much because, as I have just proven to you guys by shutting you up for 5 minutes straight, it's just me talking, I am good at the many different things that I do. And that's not always the case with some of these young or old influencers that might be popular just because they're pretty to look at, easy on the eyes, or they're good at making 60-second cooking videos or 60-second makeup videos or whatever it is that they do. If you oftentimes take these people outside of what it is that gave them prominence, or in the UK, if you take a Love Island alum and want to do more with them, they're not capable of doing more.
Stay home and chill, keeping you company during the coronavirus.